This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mukbil Yabaro, and here's what's coming up.
Zimbabwe's president himself was sentenced to death for terrorism as a young man due to his involvement in Zimbabwe's liberation struggle. The president knows what it is like to be facing the death penalty, and he now has the opportunity to ensure that no one else goes through that.
That was Lucia Masuku, head of Amnesty International in Zimbabwe, on three sub-Saharan African countries, including Zimbabwe, that are considering ending the death penalty. Also, the condition and exact whereabouts of Cameroon's President Paul Biya remain unclear, and vote counting continues today in Mozambique's presidential election. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Vote counting continues today in Mozambique's presidential election. Voters had four candidates to choose from: Daniel Chapo, the ruling Frelimo party leader; Osofo Mohamed, who was runner-up in the last presidential election; Lutero Simango, the leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement; and Venancio Mondlane, an independent candidate. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo has been in Maputo for the election. A short time ago, she spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson about the vote counting process.
I spent about maybe 3 to 4 hours at least in one polling station, which had about three voting rooms. So, you know, the vote count was being done in all four rooms. So you had to pick where you want to be. The one that I was in, for my, I think it was smooth in a sense that they take out, at least for the presidential part, they take out all the votes, they count how many people voted, and then they seal it. Then they reopen it again, and then they go through the, you know, one by one. So for me, it was about 275 people had voted in that particular room. And then they take the votes out one by one and read who's the winner. And they had two other people basically verifying it, and they put it in a pile. But the thing was that because they had 275, and then when they tallied the votes for each of the four candidates, then we did the total, it came up to 276. So there was one extra vote somewhere, or because the numbers didn't add up. But I think watching them, they just decided to count every single pile over and over again, until at the end we figured out that, you know, the numbers of 275 people who had voted were counted for.
Now, I understand that some of the candidates, the opposition candidates, have expressed certain concerns about the voting process. What are some of their concerns?
Well, I think at one of the polling stations that I visited yesterday, where you had two of the opposition candidates, Lutero Simango, the leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, who voted there. Also, Osufo Mohamed, the candidate of the main, one of the main opposition parties that came in second in the last presidential election, he also voted there. Felipe Nyusi, also the outgoing president, voted that polling station. For Lutero Simango, though, I think his complaint, he talked to press right after casting his ballot, he talked about the fact that complaining to the Mozambican National Mozambican Electoral Commission, saying that they did not accredit all his all members of his parties to basically be part of the counting process. I think everybody had to kind of, some parties had to be there to see how the counting process was going. But I think his complaint, and I think he's might be a little bit similar to Venancio Mondlane, the independent candidate, who also had some complaints similar. He didn't vote there. He voted somewhere else, but he had those kinds of complaints. For Mondlane, he also talked about the positioning of his, what do you call it, his coalition, but that's more on the parliamentary side, where that they were supposed to be in certain positions, but those numbers changed. But I think, according to the National Electoral Commission, they said that basically that happened because not all parties were competing in all electoral districts. So I think that was their defense. And I think, yeah, so those were kind of the complaints, some of the complaints that you could hear. And the National, actually, Electoral Commission also talked about the fact that some polling stations did not open on time. In Cabo Delgado, for example, there were some challenges until around 10 a.m.
That was VOA's Mariama Diallo in Maputo speaking with editor Kate Pound Dawson. The National Election Commission has 14 more days to deliver the final count to Mozambique's Constitutional Council. For more on Mozambique's election, check out voaafrica.com and voanews.com, as well as all of our social media. The international human rights organization Amnesty International says three sub-Saharan African countries considering ending the death penalty should act now and abolish it once and for all, paving the way for others around the world to follow in their footsteps. Kenya and Zimbabwe have legislation prepared to abolish the death penalty for all crimes, while Gambia, which has made steady progress against the punishment since 2017, has commenced a constitutional amendment process that will, among other things, effectively abolish the death penalty. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Lucia Masuka, head of Amnesty International in Zimbabwe, says most countries in the world are moving away from the death penalty, and she urges African countries to follow suit.
It's time for all countries to move away from this cruel, inhuman and degrading punishment once and for all. Zimbabwe's president himself was sentenced to death for terrorism as a young man due to his involvement in Zimbabwe's liberation struggle. He narrowly avoided execution as he was below the age of 21 at the time and was sentenced to 10 years in prison instead. The president knows what it is like to be facing the death penalty, and he now has the opportunity to ensure that no one else goes through that.
Addressing the parliament this month, President Emmerson Mnangagwa stuck to his 2017 promise that he would not allow the death penalty to stand in Zimbabwe.
Parliament has an obligation to expedite the enactment of all bills that, for one reason or another, are outstanding from previous sessions of this august house. You carry the burden. The list includes bills relating to death penalty abolition bill. This should be passed.
Karsten Mateu is a legislator from the country's main opposition, the Citizens Coalition for Change, and is a member of the Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee. He says Mnangagwa should not be worried about the death penalty abolition bill.
I am confident that the bill, which is currently before the Parliament of Zimbabwe, will sail through. Now, I am for the abolition of the death penalty, and this must be abolished before December. I think since 2015, there's been no execution. So this is going to sail through seamlessly because there is a majority of parliamentarians from both sides of the House who are actually in support of this bill.
But not everyone agrees. Zakaria Choga is an attorney who formerly practiced in South Africa and is now practicing law in Harare.
My opinion is the death penalty should not be abolished. I've had privilege to practice in the South African legal system. If you look at statistics since 1994, when the death penalty was abolished in South Africa, the increase has been super increase in heinous crimes, violent crimes, and crimes of passion. So actually, I'm of the opinion that the death penalty is a deterrent to crime. I think the fear of one losing their life can assist or can be a deterrence when one considers committing a crime.
Amnesty International's Masuka has a different opinion.
Countries that still retain the death penalty in their laws often resort to the death penalty, believing the punishment can make their people and communities safer. However, that is a misconception. The death penalty does not have a unique deterrent effect, and it violates the right to life as proclaimed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The small minority of countries that insist on using this punishment must move with the times and abolish the death penalty once and for all.
According to Amnesty International so far, 24 countries across sub-Saharan Africa have abolished the death penalty for all crimes, while two additional countries have abolished it for ordinary crimes only. Zimbabwe's last known execution was in 2005, though courts continue to impose death sentences. All of the condemned were sentenced to life imprisonment by President Mnangagwa's amnesty in April this year. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The Nigerian government says it has concluded arrangements to evacuate its citizens from Lebanon because of the expanding conflict with Israel in the country. Mike Mboni reports from Lagos.
Abdulrahman Balogun is the spokesperson of the Nigerians in the Diaspora Commission. He says the government has concluded arrangements to commence evacuating more than 2,000 Nigerians living in Lebanon. He says so far, only 500 Nigerians have registered and indicated they want to be evacuated.
There are efforts to evacuate willing Nigerians who want to move out of the trouble area. Prior to now, the Nigerian government has advised the citizens residing in Lebanon to move to a safer place, especially in Beirut. Also advised them to move out immediately when the availability of commercial flights are still there.
Abraman says no Nigerian casualties have been recorded since the Israeli Defense Forces began attacking Hezbollah militant positions in Lebanon. The fighting between Israel and Hezbollah has significantly increased in recent weeks, with scores of people killed in Lebanon. Eche Abu Obe, the spokesperson for the Nigerian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, has confirmed that no Nigerian life has been lost since the beginning of the conflict in Lebanon. The president of the Nigerian community in Lebanon, Roland Aigbobosa, says the situation there is bad. He says they have been monitoring the fighting between Israel and Hamas militants in Gaza over the past year, but never imagined that the war will reach Lebanon. He says Nigerians need help to leave Lebanon. He spoke to VOA via WhatsApp from Beirut.
I am appealing to the federal government not to leave us here like this, to please help us. As the government have told us before, to register the people that want to go. We are doing that currently. And as I said before, we have about 50 people that are ready. And I will still continue to appeal to the federal government to please send flight to us, that those of us that want to go back to Nigeria will be able to get that flight to go. Because at the airport now, you can hardly see a flight that, not like before, because Lebanon airport used to be very, very busy. But now it's you can hardly see flight around there.
Neither the foreign ministry nor the Nigerian community in Lebanon leaders have said when evacuations will begin. Pastor Adeyinka Omotosho is a member of the Nigerian community in Lebanon and says although Nigerians are safe, they do not want the conflict to escalate. He spoke to VOA via WhatsApp from Jenin, Lebanon.
By God's grace, we are all safe by now. Nothing happened to Nigerians for now. But what we are praying for, we don't want this thing to escalate, and I believe it will never happen. Because year 2006, I am here, and also on Nigeria, they moved to safety area, which is Christian side. So everybody being the Christian side, everything is perfectly okay. So for now, we are still okay.
The Nigerian government has advised its citizens in Lebanon to follow the instructions of local authorities and appeal to those who have not registered for evacuation to do so with the Nigerian embassy. For VOA News, I am Mike Mbonye in Lagos.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Mukbil Yabaro in Washington, and we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. That is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. The condition and exact whereabouts of Cameroon's President Paul Biya remain unclear Thursday, 2 days after the government was forced to say he was alive in Geneva, Switzerland, in response to rumors on social media that he had died. Biya, who is 91 years old, has not been seen in public for more than 5 weeks, and with elections only a year away, some opposition groups say it's time to begin thinking about a new, much younger candidate who could take the country forward. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Je voudrais vous rassurer que le président de la République, père de la nation, n'oublie
personne. Cameroon's Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji tells residents of Masok, a village near the Atlantic coast, that President Paul Biya dispatched him to provide humanitarian assistance to victims of floods sweeping across the Central African state. Nji, like many other Cameroon senior state functionaries, tells civilians that Biya is in good health and that information circulating on social and mainstream media about the 91-year-old president's death is being spread by people who want to see Cameroon devolve into chaos. Biya has not been seen in public for more than 5 weeks since he attended the Africa-China Forum in Beijing in early September. Top officials in his Cameroon People's Democratic Movement party say Biya is alive and in good health in Geneva. CPDM member Grigory Miwanu spoke Thursday on Cameroon State Radio.
The president of a nation, Cameroon, cannot be dead. And you find the prime minister in Germany with a whole entourage, the minister of interior taking care of internal politics, and the minister of public works inspecting projects.
Officials say Biya will return to Cameroon soon, but they have not said when. There was no indication he was unwell in Beijing. He was scheduled to attend a meeting of French and African leaders in Paris afterward, but he did not appear and no reason was given for his absence. Cameroon opposition and civil society say they are concerned about Biya's absence and health about a year before the country's presidential elections. They say government officials should present Biya to civilians instead of simply saying that he is alive. Michael Nguese Eke Ekoso is president of the opposition United Socialist Democratic Party.
We have had to make it clear to both national and international opinions that a number of opposition political parties are concerting and consulting with regards to the happenings of Cameroon. And this rumor is not an exemption. Decisions will be arrived at with regards to the upcoming presidential elections.
Some opposition political parties have proposed uniting behind Akere Muna, an English-speaking anti-corruption lawyer and good governance crusader, as a candidate in the October 2025 presidential election. Muna, who is 72, says if elected, he would launch a 3-year transitional period to lift Cameroon from Biya's iron-fisted 42-year rule.
Our profound conviction is that a non-renewable transition period is essential. The vision we are proposing is strengthening democracy and governance. Adopt a new constitution that incarnates the present and future aspirations of the people of Cameroon and promote free and fair elections.
If elected, Muna would be Cameroon's first leader from the western regions where English is the primary language. His supporters say having a president from that area may help end a 7-year insurgency by English-speaking armed groups who say English speakers in Cameroon are marginalized by the French-speaking majority. Opposition parties blame Biya for not being able to solve the crisis. Meanwhile, Cameroonians of all parties wait anxiously for concrete signs that Biya is alive and will be returning to his country. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Recovery efforts are underway in the U.S. state of Florida after Hurricane Milton, one of the biggest storms in a century to hit the state. Scores of neighborhoods are flooded and hundreds of houses were destroyed along the west coast of Florida, where the storm first made landfall with winds topping 200 kilometers an hour. At least 4 people died on the state's east coast when the hurricane spawned deadly tornadoes. Rescue crews have been out since yesterday to help people leave flooded areas and assess the most urgent needs in communities. About 3 million homes and businesses have been without power today. Emmanuel Badhasso, who is from Ethiopia, lives in Tampa, a city on the west coast of Florida, and shares his experience.
Since yesterday, Hurricane Milton has caused a little bit of havoc in our area, in our state. When I got out this morning and checked my neighborhood, I see a little damage, shingles, mailboxes, downed trees, electrical poles, and a few other things. Other than that, we haven't seen that much damage, like people in Fort Myers or southern Tampa, Sarasota area, what they've gone through. I see a lot of tree branches that have fallen and plugged the sewer system and the draining system. That's going to be challenging. And other than that, I see people moving around and checking their properties and people driving around. Hopefully, the wind has sustained and it's going to be cooling down, though we have slight rain for in forecast. We hope that Hurricane Hamilton has survived us. I thought it was a lot of lesson how to prepare, how to weather out this great storm. This is Emmanuel, again from Tampa, Florida, an area called the Wesley Chapel. Thank God everybody's okay in our neighborhood and our community.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump and many of his supporters claim without evidence the 2020 election was stolen and the same could happen in 2024. Democratic and Republican election officials in Michigan dispute those claims and are working to assure Americans that their votes are secure. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Witakaswara brings us this story from the U.S. state of Michigan.
This was the scene in Detroit, Michigan on Election Day 2020. Supporters of Donald Trump, fueled by his baseless claims of election fraud, pressured officials to stop counting votes. Many Trump supporters in Michigan are worrying about fraud in the upcoming election.
Right now, our government, you got to question everything about it. I mean, I don't, you know, I wish I could say differently, but that's not how America feels. We don't. We don't trust nobody.
One case is enough to question the whole system.
Allegations that the 2020 election was rigged have been repeatedly debunked in U.S. courts. But disinformation around election integrity has gained traction among Republicans. Polls show they are more likely to trust Trump over government-certified election results. Officials in battleground states are working to assure voters that the election process is secure. They say disinformation can be dangerous. Jonathan Brader, director of the Michigan Bureau of Elections.
They can, in some cases, lead to people making threats to election officials or worse. But even if it doesn't result in any sort of physical violence, it does undermine trust long term in the election system, which is bad for our republic and is bad for our democracy.
In many states, Republicans support efforts to assure voters that elections are secure, including Justin Roebuck, a Republican election official in Ottawa County, Michigan. He says it's an uphill battle.
Our political leaders at every level need to also seek facts and to seek data. And I think until that happens, we will have a problem, you know, in terms of our confidence and trust in the process.
In Michigan, Trump loyalists have already sued Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, a Democrat, over absentee ballot processing guidelines and the voter registration list. Michigan Republican Party Chairperson Pete Hoekstra.
If Jocelyn Benson is not responding to what is required under the law, we will take her to court to get the courts to compel her to do that.
Benson dismissed it as a Republican campaign strategy.
In general, we see lawsuits masquerading as a legal strategy when they're really a PR strategy to get misinformation or sow seeds of doubt about our elections into the narrative.
Republicans and Democrats have launched election-related lawsuits in various battleground states, which could mean chaos in the November election. Kim Wyman, senior fellow with Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project via Zoom.
Any kind of legal challenge happening this close to an election typically is lawyers putting a placeholder in case they may not win in a state or may not have an outcome they like. And it gives them the ability to challenge the election after the fact.
There are other potential disruptions, including efforts by county officials who support Trump to delay election certification. Pat Suida, Kuswara, VOA News, Flint, Michigan.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mukbil Yabaro in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Pete Huntley, thank you for choosing The Voice of America.